he promised was legit business and not to be messed with.
Gotta go. Meeting Mason. Just saw you sitting out here and wanted to say goodbye.
He started to stand. Can I write you? He sat back down, giving me a puzzling expression. You know, with a pen and paper, like pen pals. I'll write you. You write me back. So you know you have a friend waiting for you when you come back home. He scoffed out, taken aback.
We'll see, yeah?
Yeah, I replied, trying to hide my disappointment. He stood brushing the sand from his black jeans. I followed suit, needing to head back inside. Without giving it any thought, I threw my arms around his waist, laying my head on his rock-solid stomach, feeling the hard metal tucked in the back of his jeans digging into my skin. I didn't care. I just wanted to remember how he smelt, how he felt. Most of all, I wanted to give him a hug before he left. Scared I would never see him again. He froze, caught off guard by my sentiment, but I didn't care. I just hugged him harder, squeezing him tight. He finally relaxed after a few seconds, placing his arm around me, lightly hugging me back. I smiled through the tears that threatened in my eyes. I couldn't help it. I was getting through his icy, broody demeanor, and that was something to be happy about. He pulled away first, tugging on the end of my pigtails.
Stay a little. You feel me?
I feel you. He nodded one last time and turned to leave. Creed! I called out, stopping him. He looked back at me. It's not goodbye. It's just an I'll see you later. I saluted him. He smiled, nodding, saluting me back. I watched him leave with a heavy heart, silently praying for him and Mason to come home, safe.
Chapter 16. Creed. I walked onto the bus around 6 a.m. on a Sunday, waiting for Mason. They are transporting us 7.5 hours away to Fort Benning, Georgia, for 19 weeks of hell. Then on to Fort Bragg to begin our job training for at least a year. My recruiter helped me get my GED so I was able to enlist. We didn't want to be just any soldiers. We wanted to be special operations soldiers. I wanted to be a weapons specialist, already knowing so much about guns, while Mason wanted to be an engineer. I watched from the window as his whole family hugged him goodbye, including Pippin, who had tears streaming down her little face. His mom, Stacy, and stepmom, Alex, stood behind her, trying like hell to keep it together but failing miserably. No one showed up to see me off, not giving a fuck I was leaving. Mia's eyes found mine, and she could sense my stare, immediately wiping away her tears, not wanting me to see her cry, proving to me that she really was just a baby girl. Her eyes held so much worry, so much sincerity in that moment, not only for Mason, for me too. A kid I had only seen a handful of times in the last 3 years cared more about me than my own blood, in ways I had never seen or felt before. The emotion shown in her bright blue glossy eyes heightened a connection between us that I had never realized before. I reached into my pocket and pulled out the first patch she ever gave me, placing the word courage on the window for her to see. She instantly smiled and it lit up her entire face. I couldn't help but smile back. She was just too fucking adorable not to. Basic training, a.k.a. boot camp, was an adjustment to say the fucking least. I went from doing whatever the hell I wanted in Devil's Rejects to beyond strict, no bullshit, daily regimens in the military. Soon as we stepped foot on that fucking base, we were no longer civilians, but soldiers. Getting stripped of our normal clothes and thrown into a chair for a military buzz cut. The further we got into training, the more brutal it became. We went from the classroom learning the ropes of being an army soldier to the field where our drill sergeants pushed us to the breaking point, testing our strength, endurance, most importantly, our fucking sanity, pulling us out of bunks at all hours of the night in the shittiest conditions possible, running drills and crawling obstacles, digging holes just for the hell of it, being belittled to the extreme of wanting to fucking hang yourself. I learned quickly not to speak unless spoken to. What the fuck? We all groaned out, being woken up at 2 a.m. to bright lights and yelling.
Come on, you pansy-ass sons of bitches! Get the fuck out of bed and suit up!
Drill Sergeant Emery's voice boomed through our sleeping quarters.
I ain't got all day! Move, move, move!
Everyone was half asleep but still managed to hop off their beds, throw on clothes and boots, and line up in front of their bunks.
Your fucking grandma moves faster than that, Paulson, you lazy-ass motherfucker!
He spewed in the private's face.
My meemaw's dead, Drill Sergeant. Did she die waiting on your sorry ass to get her to the goddamn hospital? No, drill sergeant. Drop and give your meemaw 20, private, and count 'em.
Paulson fell to the linoleum and started counting out loud. Nice of you to fucking join us, Private Jameson, he called me out, not even looking in my direction. Why are you dragging ass? Don't tell me it's because you needed your beauty sleep. He walked over to me, getting right in my face. You are one bulldog-looking cocksucker, he yelled inches away from my mouth, the veins in his neck working overtime. I didn't back down. I need to piss, drill sergeant, I shouted, standing up taller, looking over his head. You piss when I tell you to piss. Did I tell you to fucking piss? I hesitated, working my fists at my sides. I never liked being told what I could and couldn't do. This motherfucker was pushing my goddamn buttons. No, drill sergeant. Drop and give me 50 for pissing. Yes, drill sergeant. I got down in a plank position. The dog tag Autumn gave me with Luke's face on it slipped out of my t-shirt, catching the sergeant's eye. What do we have here? He questioned, crouching down in front of me, ripping the chain from my neck in one swift motion. Before giving it any thought, I jumped to my feet, shoving my superior hard in the chest. Don't fucking touch those, I roared. Creed, stand down, Mason gritted in a low tone only I heard, knowing shit was about to hit the fan. You have some brass balls, Private? This your son? He held up the necklace. I shook my head, no. I ask you a fucking question, Private Jameson. When I ask you a question, I expect a fucking answer. Now, was this your son? Little brother, drill sergeant, I replied through a clenched jaw. Aw, ain't that sweet. You can get this back after you earn it. No personal effects swore on your body. Already breaking fucking rules, Private. Trust me, you'll pay for this today. Now drop and give me 100. You got 5 minutes. You go over 1 second, you'll start again. Now let's see how long it takes you to be a real fucking man. I completed them in 3, and I swear the son of a bitch grinned as he walked away from me. Mason and I completed basic and job infantry training with flying colors, moving on to airborne training in which we'd be learning to jump out of planes and shit, becoming paratroopers and gaining our wings. I couldn't fucking wait to make that jump. That's where we met Owen, a ruthless motherfucker from Arkansas. He happened to be the same fucker I had a run-in with at the Oak Island Fair tent, because of Autumn a few years back. He was there, vacationing with his family. Didn't take long for me to realize how fucking small the world truly was. We were unpacking our shit at new headquarters when a picture of Autumn fell to the floor. This your girlfriend? Owen asked, holding up the Polaroid. Something like that, I tore it from his grasp, throwing it on the dresser, not wanting to explain or get into that with a complete goddamn stranger. Wait, let me see that again, he helped himself, reaching over to take a closer look. Where'd you say you were from? I didn't. Aw, man, I'd recognize those tits and ass anywhere. She's a feisty redhead I met in Oak Island a while back. Would have fucked her if it weren't for... I had him pinned up against the wall by his throat before he got the last word out. Me? Beating your fucking face in? I suggest you choose your words wisely. I won't hesitate to fuck you up again. I released him with a shove, going back to unpacking. That was you. I knew you looked vaguely familiar. Put me in the damn hospital for days. Broke my fucking jaw. My mouth was wired shut for weeks. Not even sorry. I walked out of the room. Owen and I eventually put our differences behind us, both wanting to make our country proud and take down the fuckers who took so much away from us. Especially me. I wasn't just fighting for the United States, I was fighting for Autumn. My men had my fucking back and I had theirs. When our 19 weeks at Fort Benning were completed, we got stationed at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, together for Special Forces job training. I was top of my fucking class when it came to speed. I could draw my gun in a matter of seconds, taking out anyone who stood in my fucking way. All those years of handling guns for the wrong reasons with the MC came in handy. I had the eye of a sniper with a quick hand. No military-issue guns at the back of my hand brought me to where I was now, my job. No one fucking crossed me. Upon completion, we were all assigned to the same barracks, the building that housed us. We got orders for our first deployment to Afghanistan right after we finished training. At the time, I thought I was a badass motherfucker who was invincible. I was on top of the fucking world, ready to go in with guns fucking blazing, killing the fuckers that took so much away from me, from us. I was trained to kill. I was trained to not ask questions. I was trained to turn off the last bit of my humanity. But no amount of training prepared me for the things I was forced to witness,
Things they don't tell you about before you enlist and devote your life for the greater fucking good. Things they don't show you on the news or read about in newspapers. They don't show you the fucking bad. Only the good. I thought I had seen it all, but I couldn't have been more fucking wrong. Watching the aftermath of women and children being raped, beaten, and shot by their own insurgents because the men wouldn't join their cause. Devastation brought on by their own fucking kind. There was no telling the difference between the innocent and corrupt overseas. It all blended together. You quickly realized that every time you suited up, every time you threw on those army fatigues, it was life or death. It was their lives or yours. Special ops were trained fucking killers. Every mission we were assigned to was top secret. We didn't even know what we were being dragged in for until we got there. Being deployed on any given day without warning. Couldn't say shit about anything either. Especially when we came back. Our main mission that never changed was to fucking find them before they killed us. Kill. Or be killed. Exactly like the fucking MC. Being in special forces meant being deployed more often, but for shorter increments. Typically, they only lasted anywhere from 4 to 6 months, depending on the unit, location, and need. I had been back at Fort Bragg, North Carolina for a month. I was stationed for about an hour and a half from home. I didn't know when I would be shipped out again, so I was planning on taking advantage of the little freedom I had as best I could. As I sat in my barracks, though, my mind replayed scenes I wish I could erase for good. I lit a cigarette, inhaling the nicotine, immediately feeling the rush of the toxins course through my lungs. Leaning my head back, blowing a puff of smoke into the stale air, thinking of all those memories that plagued my soul. My unit was called out to a small run-down village to search out insurgents and collect intel on Osama bin Laden's whereabouts. It was pouring rain, God unleashing his wrath upon the battlegrounds, when a group of kids came sneaking out of an abandoned concrete building.
Two boys dressed in uniform, and three elders about 2 yards out, heading north,
Owen's voice rasped over the radio.
I got a visual, I replied, talking into my shoulder, never taking my eyes off them.
Creed, it's your call. Look like they're holding something, bro. It's not a good time to be a fucking pussy. Pull out your damn tampon, grow a pair of fucking balls, and take them the fuck out.
Motherfucker, I seethed, making my way closer, my eye trained on them through the scope of my gun. They stopped dead in their tracks, exchanging some words, looking all around them, searching for I don't know what. Then the elders suddenly pulled out grenades from their jackets, handing them to the boys. I jerked back. Fuck, I breathed out, knowing what I had to do. I didn't hesitate, pulling the trigger till they were no longer little boys in school uniforms, but the enemy I was trained to take out. Here 1 minute, gone the next. The casualties of war. That was the first kill under my belt on my first deployment to Afghanistan. The military desensitized me, more so than I was before, or maybe I'd already been numb to it all. I had new nightmares, new ghosts of men, women, and sometimes children I'd killed for my country, haunting me. Kids as young as Noah, some even younger. All of them ingrained to hate the red, white, and blue. I caught a glimpse of myself in the floor-length mirror hanging from my closet door, taking in all the ink I had collected over the years. Between the MC and the military tattoos, each and every piece I had inched to my skin had a story to tell, a memory to hold on to, till the day I fucking died. Most soldiers collected something important to them. I collected tattoos, branding my skin every chance I fucking got. It was the same thing day in and day out. Nights in the military were some of the loneliest times of my life. I had nothing to distract myself with. Didn't matter how exhausted I was, how much I pushed my body physically and mentally. Sleep never came easily. My memories are always there. The bad and brutal ones outweighed the good. The good memories never lasted. My mind only programmed to bring back the bad. It was instinctual for me, seeing the images of my goddamn life rotating around me like the moon rotated around the earth. Reminded me of the life I'd only known as fucking hell. There are times when I couldn't shake it off. As much as I tried, they wouldn't let me go, tightened around my neck, the weaving of a tight rope of memories, strangling me till I couldn't fucking breathe, like a noose, sucking the life right out of me. I welcomed that feeling. At least then I knew I was still fucking alive. Being a Special Operations Weapons Specialist, I was allowed 30 days leave a calendar year. I spent most of my free time on the weekends and I wasn't working or when I was on leave at the club. Diesel had stepped in as acting vice pres till I could return. I still paid my dues and was involved in as much as I could be, and they kept me informed and up to date on everything that was going down. I tried to see Noah every chance I got, except he never wanted to fucking see me. In the event I did see him, he refused to talk, letting me do all the talking. I could feel the resentment oozing off his pores. He was 16, acting as if he was a grown-ass man, spending more and more time at the clubhouse against my wishes. I went from one fucked-up situation to another. My mother seemed like she was trying to get her shit together. She kept me in the loop when I was away, writing me letters often, telling me about her journey to sobriety, telling me she was attending meetings and had found a sponsor, busying herself with Stacy and Laura, too, barely ever mentioning my old man as if he didn't exist in her life anymore. I saw Mia more often than I saw Noah, driving in with Mason so he could kiss Gazelle's ass who hadn't forgiven him for listening in the first place. Pippin was still the smart-ass baby girl, wise beyond her fucking years. I found myself looking forward to the next time I saw the now 14-year-old Spitfire. One morning, a few weeks after I left, they said my name during a mail call. It shocked the shit out of me. I never expected to receive mail from her, not in a million years. But when Mia set her mind on something, come hell or high water, she was gonna make it happen. There was an envelope with pink handwriting from Mia Ryder, a.k.a. Pippin. She wrote me letters every so often, each time sending a new patch, telling me all about what was happening back in the States. What was going on with her life, how her daddy still didn't let her do anything, how surfing was her only source of freedom, telling me she had placed first in a local surfing contest, taking down some of the best, kicking their asses, and how much she prayed for Mason and me, missing us both. I actually started looking forward to her letters, taking in a little bit of happiness and fucking sunshine she brought into my life. She was a breath of fresh air in this death-infested land, but on most days, I was just left alone with only my thoughts and memories. Fighting my demons as I protected my country.
Chapter 17. Mia. There was a small man-made lake just off Pepperbush Drive in Woodland Parks. I ride my bike there often, just to have some peace and quiet. A secluded place I could be alone with my thoughts, away from the busy beaches of Oak Island. I had discovered it after Uncle Austin bought his house on the property, exploring the area one day when we were there for a barbecue. I took the dirt road down to my special spot at the lake, parking my bike near the willow tree. I grabbed my sunglasses, radio, and headphones from my backpack and headed down to the water's edge. Slipping off my sandals near the shoreline, I waded through the tall grass into the murky, warm water, letting the hot sun beam down on me as I listened to the crickets chirp, finding peace amongst the world's chaos. I climbed up onto the rope swing that hung just above the water off a willow branch, put my headphones on, scrolled through my songs, and found what I was looking for. I started to swing to the soft melody of Broken by Seether, watching the ground beneath me blur into one, singing at the top of my lungs when the song hit my favorite part. When all of a sudden, the swing jerked back, almost sending me into the water. I let out a scream, turning back to see who was behind me. Never expecting to see him. Creed.
Got some set of lungs on you,
he chuckled, letting go of the swing. What the hell? You scared the shit out of me, I exclaimed, immediately hopping off the swing, kicking water up, splashing him. He grinned in that Creed smart-ass sort of way. Cocking his head to the side, he challenged.
Don't start a war you can't win, Pippin.
Oh yeah, soldier? I never took my eyes off his as I tossed all my stuff next to my sandals on the shoreline so it wouldn't get wet. With a shit-eating grin on my face, I leaned forward, building up the anticipation of what I was about to do. Pushing my hands through the water, I shoved a huge wave into his face. He stepped back, his eyes widening in shock of what I'd done.
Don't try me,
he dared, hiding back a smile. I thought I already did. I splashed him again. This time with much more water in my hands, not caring he was wearing his cut, which still didn't have any of my patches on it.
Do one more time and watch what happens, baby girl.
I contemplated, placing my finger on the corner of my lips. I'm not a baby. I'm almost 15, and the name's Pippin. Get it straight. I didn't give him a chance to reply before I went full force, splashing him as much as I could, laughing my ass off the entire time. Never letting up, throwing heaps of water at him. I vaguely heard him say,
Can't bitch, I warned you.
What? He threw me over his shoulder as if I weighed nothing, catching me by surprise, holding the back of my knees to keep me locked in place. Wait! What are you doing? This isn't fair. You're bigger than me, I shouted, pressing my hands on his back to look up and see where we were going. He walked deeper into the lake, not caring he was getting his jeans completely soaked. No, I don't want to go in there. Creed, I'm wearing a pretty dress. Please, I pleaded, kicking and screaming. His hands shifted to grip onto my waist, getting ready to do the unthinkable. I held on to him tighter, even though I knew it didn't matter. He was stronger than me.
Begging won't work in this situation, Pippin. Should have thought of that before you decided you wanted to go to war with a soldier. I don't lose.
I'm sorry. I was just playing. Put me down, please.
All right, only because you asked so nicely.
I smiled, thinking I'd won. I couldn't have been more wrong. All of a sudden, he lifted me up by my waist, tearing my arms off him and hurling me into the air. I landed in the lake, submerged in water, my whole body going under. You asshole! I shouted, coming up from under the water, swimming back over to him, stumbling to my feet once I was standing in knee-deep water. I looked down with my hands out at my sides. Look! Look what you did to my pretty white dress! It's ruined now. I peered up, glaring, ready to give him hell, but the expression on his face rendered me speechless. His eyes roamed my soaking wet body, starting from my hips to my chest and up to my face with a predatory regard. Our eyes locked for a split second, and he reached up, wiping a droplet of water from my cheek. His warm thumb stirred emotions deep inside of me, causing my lips to part and my body to shudder. I swear I could see his walls slowly crumbling down, revealing a look I had never seen from him before. As fast as it happened, it was gone. He shook it off, clearing his throat, stepping back and looking away from me, lost in his own thoughts. He rubbed the back of his head while an uncomfortable silence filled the air between us. I didn't understand what had just happened or what earned me that look. All I knew was, I liked it. A lot. I followed the wake of his stare, looking down at my dress again, finally realizing the white flowy cotton clung to my body like a second skin, accentuating my curves and breasts. The outline of my cream bra and panties showed through the very see-through fabric. I swallowed hard, suddenly feeling exposed and vulnerable, but I didn't move to cover myself up. For the first time in my life, I felt as though someone was looking at me as the woman I was becoming, and not the baby girl everyone kept saying I still was. It wasn't just anyone. It was Creed. And I love that more than anything. My dress. He took off his cut, throwing it on the shore beside my things, reaching for the hem of his white shirt next, pulling it over his head and taking it off.
Here.
He interrupted, throwing it at me, still looking away. I grinned, bringing it up to my nose for a second before slipping it on, wanting to memorize his scent, giggling as I took in my appearance. I look like I'm wearing a potato sack. He turned, facing me again, crossing his arms over his chest. Just when I thought it couldn't get any more uncomfortable, this added a whole new spin on the awkwardness. My mouth almost dropped open at the sight of the man standing in front of me. His body was so tense from what just happened between us, showing off every sleek muscle and tattoo. He was covered in ink, from his sculpted chest down to his carved abs, emphasizing his eight-pack. His boots were submerged in the lake, soaking the bottom of his jeans. The heaviness of the water dragged them down his slender waist, showing off a V right above his happy trail. Which, that in itself, did all sorts of things to me. His tattooed arms were defined, toned, and bulky, only adding to his tall, husky frame. He was a real-life bad boy. I couldn't breathe. He followed my stare down to his exposed body, exactly the way I just did moments ago when he was peering at me. Looking back up to my face, he pursed his lips, trying not to grin. It was my turn to look away from him, even though I didn't want to. My cheeks were flushed, my heart raced, rapidly beating hard against my chest, making me weak in the knees. His silence only made things more awkward between us. I hated it as much as I loved it.
"Don't look bad wearing my shirt, potato sack and all,"
he remarked, finally breaking the silence. I blushed, looking back over at him. Smirking, I replied, "You make it a habit of following girls out to the lake?"
"Not since I was 12,"
he drawled out, placing his hands in his pockets, accentuating his strong build. It was baffling how a grown man could look bigger every time he came around. I didn't see him or my brother very often, even though they were only stationed in Fort Bragg, 2 hours away from Oak Island. Both of them held high positions in the Army, which had them deployed on missions or in training a lot. Creed was Mason's sergeant in their Special Forces unit. He was a weapons specialist, and Mason was an engineer who blew shit up. I would always count down the days for their return, even if I only saw them for a few hours. Mason would come home on leave for a few weeks, but I never saw Creed when he did. Things hadn't been the same since Mason left over 2.5 years ago. My mama and Stacy were a nervous wreck on most days, worrying if their baby boy was okay, especially when they were off on missions or deployed. Mama jumped every time the phone rang, thinking bad news was waiting for her on the other end. Dad busied himself with work and acted like nothing had changed, but we all knew he was just as worried. He was good about keeping his emotions in check. Mama, on the other hand, was not. Life at home just wasn't the same without Mason. It was definitely quieter, though. We all missed him, and prayed every night he was safe, looking forward to his next letter he'd send monthly, whenever he could. Not much had changed with me, except my body, which only had my dad implementing more rules, adding to the never-ending list of things I couldn't do. I was suffocating in my own home, more so than ever before. No one understood where I was coming from. It was a battle I'd never win, but I refused to stop fighting. I drowned myself in school, work, and surfing, when all I really wanted was to feel like I belonged. "I didn't know you were coming to visit with Mason. When did you guys get in? Wait, how did you know I was down here?" I asked, putting my hands on my hips, cocking my head to the side, giving him a questioning glare. He cleared his throat again, rasping in a hoarse tone.
"Was sitting up at the diner, saw you rolling by."
"Oh, so you did follow me."
"Why the sad song, Pippin?"
he asked, ignoring my question.
"Boy break your heart, I'll break his fucking legs."
I laughed for what felt like the first time in months. "You need boys to talk to you before they can break your heart," I confessed, walking to my stuff by the shoreline. I sat down, leaning back on my hands, leaving my feet dangling in the lake. Creed followed, sitting beside me, putting his cut back on. He pulled out his cigarettes.
"Look what you did,"
he nodded, throwing the wet pack of smokes in between us. "Serves you right. They're bad for you anyway."
"Is that right?"
he drawled out sarcastically.
"Never heard that one before."
"Fine," I shrugged. "I'll start smoking too then."
"The fuck you are,"
he scoffed out, chuckling.
"So what's this about boys not talking to you?"
staring at the side of my face. I shrugged again, not knowing what to say.
"Don't need boys to talk to you anyway. Got enough men in your life to make up for those little shits."
I rolled my eyes. "You sound like my dad. Between him and my uncles, no guys have even made it to the front door. I'm almost 15, Creed, and I've never even been kissed. Do you know what it's like to be the only girl in 9th grade who's never been on a date or been kissed?" I questioned, looking up at him. "All my friends have. It's all they talk about when we hang out, which isn't often anymore. Most of them already have boyfriends who they spend every waking moment with." Sighing, I took a deep breath.
"Never said a thing about it in your letters."
"You want to hear about my love life, or lack thereof?" I arched an eyebrow. "You know how my dad is. You think that's changed?" "Hell no! It's only gotten worse, especially since Mason took off. Bo doesn't cause half the trouble he did. They have nothing to do but focus on me."
"You're a baby girl."
"Is that why you never write me back?" He placed his hands on his knees.
"Don't think your daddy would appreciate that."
"Ugh,"
I blurted, knowing he was right. He would lose his shit if a letter from Creed came addressed to me. It's so frustrating. I can't date. I can barely leave my house without my dad on my ass, asking me where I'm going. He's never going to let me grow up. There's a dance at school next week, and I didn't even get asked, nor am I allowed to go. I'm going to end up alone with 20 cats, wearing shirts that say, "Meow's it going?" He let out a throaty laugh from deep within his chest. My eyes widened, caught off guard by his reaction. "It's not funny. I'm going to be the cat lady, and you're laughing."
"I'll lay it out for you, Pippin,"
he muttered through his laughter, shaking his head.
"Boys your age just want to get laid. Shit. Men in general just want a piece of ass. They don't care about anything but your legs spreading, especially when their balls just dropped. The bullshit they feed is just so you'll let them in."
"Oh," I jerked back, glancing over at him. "Were you, I mean, you know, did you do stuff, you know, like that too?"
"Nah, sweetheart, I'm an honest asshole."
"What about Autumn? I thought she was your girlfriend. I mean, she was gorgeous. I wish I looked like her." He narrowed his eyes at me, contemplating what he was going to say.
"Don't ever try to be something you ain't. You're perfect the way you are, yeah?"
My belly fluttered, but I warily nodded, looking back out at the water.
"To hell with those little shits who won't stand up for you. You'll meet a man one day who'll love you and show you, taking names for whoever steps in his fucking way, and he'll be one lucky bastard to have you as his woman by his side."
"You really think so?"
"I know so. You're only gonna be 15, sweetheart. Got your whole life ahead of you."
I smiled, big and wide. I knew I was still young. I knew Creed was a lot older than I was, always would be. I knew we were from opposite sides of the tracks, always had been, probably always would be. But I also knew right then and there, I wanted him to be that man in my life, the one he just described with so much sincerity and love in his voice. Knowing with every last beat of my still young heart, I always had.
Chapter 18, Creed. I walked into the debriefing tent just after 0400 in the morning to receive instructions on our next mission. It was the tail end of my third deployment to Afghanistan since entering the military for over 3 years prior. I hadn't been home in 6 months. The debriefing tents were like classrooms with rows of desks and folding chairs, all situated around whiteboards with instructions and notes. Pictures of enemies, territories, and intelligence projected up on a screen. Who needed to be found and taken down? Dead or fucking alive. The last 4 months of this deployment had been pure hell on earth. The same old bullshit every single day on repeat, embarking on endless foot patrol missions that would last for 2 to 3 weeks at a time. Literally eating shit, having no clue what it really was. It was either choke it down or fucking starve. I took turns sleeping in the ditches or in the mud with one eye open, waiting for the insurgents to emerge from the goddamn hills. Always feeling like we were being watched. Our finger on the trigger of our guns at all times, ready to unleash on the enemies at any given moment. Days were long and the nights even longer. We climbed every fucking mountain, searching every cave for a man I started to believe didn't fucking exist to begin with. Raiding villages, gaining intel that led us nowhere but chasing our own fucking asses. Sniffing out insurgents like fucking rabid dogs. Using any measures necessary to get the cocksuckers to fucking talk. Crazy part about all of it was being back in Afghanistan almost felt like home. We all felt that way. Being a civilian was much harder than being a soldier. War will fuck you up to the point where nothing would make sense when you came back to the States. Our minds always on the battlefield along with the souls we'd fucking taken. That was another thing the military didn't prepare you for. Real life. Readjusting to normal life was the hardest fucking pill to swallow. It was so fucking difficult to switch your normalcy back on and turn off the kill or be killed mentality at all times of the day. The littlest things like a lawnmower starting or a ceiling fan spinning around could trigger things in my mind that I didn't even fucking know were there. A momentary lapse in judgment would occur between not knowing where you were or how you would react. I lived and breathed war for months at a time. We were under constant attack. Car bombs, suicide bombers, roadside bombs, mortars, motherfuckers looking at you like they fucking hated you. Day in and day out. I killed enemies. I lost brothers. Exactly like the MC. Long periods of violence were a psychological beating. In the real world, I was suspicious, tightly wound, and easily angered. If I thought my temper was bad before, well, I couldn't have been more wrong about that.
I'd wake up several times throughout the night, freaking the fuck out that I couldn't find my gun. The fight-or-flight mentality I had became just fight. And now became my life. Always waiting for the other shoe to fucking drop. Always on alert. Always waiting to kill what I couldn't fucking see. These missions all required the same thing. Finesse and stealth-like abilities, to only a handful of special operations teams could pull off. My team, the one I was in charge of, was the best of the fucking best. A group of ruthless motherfuckers who feared nothing. Dropped into the shittiest conditions imaginable. Enduring the worst possible situations known to man. And coming back for more. We headed into the drop zone that day, active combat duty. About 15 miles out, we were informed to get ready. A group of assholes was already spotted heading in our direction by another U.S. team of soldiers. My unit bunked down in a wooded area about 2 miles from some local villages and started scouting the area. Rifles loaded and fucking ready to shoot, stepping one foot in front of the other, listening all around for any sign of the fuckers. I put my left hand up, signaling to continue. All clear, I informed through my radio, looking through my scope, turning right and left. We trucked through the woods trying to be as invisible as possible, blending in with nature. Not even my breathing could get out of sync. The more treacherous the situation, the calmer I was. See, my worst nightmares had already come true. There was nothing left for me to fear but fear itself. My adrenaline worked overtime, knowing the enemy was close, but I had no visual at all. All my actions and orders needed to be calculated and precise. My hearing only heightened with every step I took toward the direction of danger. Suddenly, screams echoed in the distance, halting our descent. I signaled my team to stop, pointing to my ear and then out in front of me. More commotion just outside the village we were approaching filled the wooded area. A whizzing noise sounded to my right, instantly followed by a hard thud. My initial instinct was to fall to the ground, but I ignored that feeling. "Fuck, get down!" I bellowed through my radio, looking over to find Andrews, lay on his back a few feet away, not moving. Blood ran down his face into the earth. My team took cover, tucked him behind trees, lying on their stomachs in the mud, scoping the area to find the motherfucker open fire. 4 or 5 Afghani militants were coming upon us fast. There was no time to think. No time to breathe. No time to get the fuck out of there. "Take those motherfuckers out, now!" I shouted over the noise of bullets flying inches away from taking my life. Women screaming, shots blaring with open fire all around as I made my way to him. "Andrews, you stay with us, do you hear me? Fight, motherfucker! Day's not your day to die!" I screamed, wading through the mud, ducking left and right, dodging the copper rounds and the enemies and my own men, trying to get over to him. Another bullet flew past me, this time grazing my left shoulder. "Fuck!" I gritted, bringing my right hand up to the wound, feeling how bad I was hit. Blood came oozing out of my arm onto my fingers. "Fucking cocksucker!" Grabbing my rifle, I aimed right at the asshole responsible, shooting his ass down dead in his tracks, falling to my knees next to Andrews, who was still unresponsive. I didn't have to check for a pulse. I knew by the gaping hole in his forehead he was gone. I stripped him of his gun and ammo, grabbing his helmet that had a picture of his wife Deb and their brand new baby girl secured in it, a letter peeking out through his pocket. I did the sign of the cross over his body, muttering, "Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and all that fucking shit." First time we lost one of our own in the line of duty, I didn't know how to send off the soldier, so I found myself doing the exact same sentiment I'd seen my father do too many goddamn times to count. I was never a religious man, and that seemed better than saying nothing at all. "I'm so sorry, brother. We will take every last one of these bastards down." "Creed!" Mason yelled, bringing my attention to him, pointing north. I looked up through the clearing, revealing a scene of complete horror unfolding in the village. Insurgents dragging girls out of the village school by their hair, kicking and screaming. I knew what was in the cards of these girls, and it took every last fiber of my being not to rush in there and take down every last son of a bitch. Mason came running over, dodging bullets and falling next to us, breaking me away from the scene. "Creed, you hit?" "You seeing this?" I see, nodding over to them. Ignoring my question, he asked again, "Are you hit?" "For fuck's sake, I'm fine. Just a graze. Need to do something before those bastards rape and then murder them all. Help me get Andrews over to that fallen tree." I nodded toward the massive log laying just a few feet away, slipping his pictures and letter into my pocket, wanting to make sure I personally delivered them to his wife, if and when we got out of here. Owen covered us as we lifted Andrews' limp body up by his pack and dragged him to the tree. First rule of fucking war.
No soldier was left behind. None of us had time to reflect on another stolen life, on another soldier not returning home to his wife and kids, on another innocent life taken. "Sergeant Jameson to headquarters, do you copy?" I radioed as Owen took some gauze from his pack and started wrapping my arm tight like a tourniquet. He was our medic.
"Copy, Jameson. This is Major Douglas from headquarters."
"We got one soldier dead and several wounded,"
I informed, cupping my ear to muffle out the sound all around us, searching the area.
"We're near Hezarak, located 33 degrees, 59 minutes, 49 seconds north, 69 degrees, 2 minutes, 23 seconds east of Logar.
We have a visual on the village. Several Taliban men are raiding an all-girls schoolhouse. Fucking pulling them out by their goddamn hair, beating them, and doing God knows what else. We're going in. I repeat, we're going in!"
"Stand down, soldier."
"What?"
I jerked back, holding the receiver closer to my ear, thinking I didn't hear him correctly.
"You heard me. You stand the fuck down!"
Major Douglas's voice screeched to the radio. "That village is none of the U.S. government's concern. It is not part of your mission, Sergeant. Do you hear me? You stand the fuck down. That's an order. Do you copy?"
"You shitting me right now? We're not going to sit back and watch innocent little girls get fucking raped and killed when we can help them. We got visual of another U.S. Army troop right outside the premises. We could take these motherfuckers down, complete our missions, be back by dinner. We're going in."
Once the coast was clear, I stood, ignoring the surge of pain radiating down my arm and the blood dripping from my fingers.
"Creed, you heard him. Stand down,"
Owen yelled after me. "If you want those baby girls' lives on your conscience, then you were one fucked up soldier. Grab your shit and let's go, you fucking pussy. Won't tell you again. That's an order." Major Douglas's voice came back over the radio again.
"The fuck you are, soldier. Stand down. They have orders not to return fire, not to engage in any way. You go in there, you are dead. You must pick and choose our battles, and this is not our battle to fight. Now stand the fuck down, Jameson."
I didn't hesitate. I ran as fast as I fucking could, but not fast enough. The little girl's agonizing screams filled my ears as I watched her take punch after punch through her tiny frame, her face nearly unrecognizable from the distance between us, covered in her own blood and dirt, muffled by the impact of his fists. My vision tunneled the closer I got. Another rush of adrenaline coursed through me as my heart pumped in my ears at a rapid speed, as if I was having a goddamn heart attack. All I saw was red. All I wanted was to save him, even if it would cost my life. Another Taliban towered over the girl, ripping her panties off, letting his artillery belt fall to the dirt as he unzipped his pants and pulled out his cock.
"That's an order!" I heard the major's voice echo through the woods and the radio. "You can take your order and shove it up your fucking ass!"
I barely got the last word out when a bullet struck my thigh, tripping me up. Time seemed to pick that moment to suddenly slow down. Everything happened in slow motion. I fell forward, screaming, "No!" as another bullet blurred past my face. An AK-47 from behind me struck an Afghani running toward me right between the eyes as I hit the ground. Mason may have saved my life, but what I was forced to witness in the coming minutes nearly fucking killed me in itself.
"Soldier down! I repeat, Sergeant Jameson is down!"
Mason's muffled voice announced over the radio.
"Fuck! God damn it! I have a helicopter en route. ETA 15 minutes.
"Copy that," Mason stated, suddenly lifting me over his shoulder, walking us back to the unit where they took cover. We were all forced to witness the deaths of the little girls. None of us made a sound as we watched the brutal violence unfolding in front of us. I swear you could hear their screams miles from the village. The last bit of our morality was taken from all of us that day as we sat there, allowing the motherfuckers to rip away their innocence, thrusting in and out of them, beating them until they are no longer screaming, laughing and fucking enjoying themselves the entire time. Their horrid screams filled the air, bringing my squad to their goddamn knees, helpless to cover in their ears, silently breaking down. They silently prayed to the Lord above to forgive them for their sins. I fucking cursed them for allowing it to begin with. This wasn't the first, and it wouldn't be the last we were told to stand down. Only fueling my hatred for our government.
Chapter 19. Mia. I went to school that day, never expecting what was to come. Rick was in a bunch of my classes that semester at school. Most of my classes were advanced. I was only a sophomore, but he was in junior classes. He was the only boy who paid me any mind, taking every opportunity to flirt with me, asking to borrow a pencil, or questions about math he didn't understand. I knew it was a ploy. I saw all his tests and assignments were A's when our math teacher handed them back. After the final bell rang at school, I went to my locker to put my books away, and a piece of paper fell to my feet. I picked it up, turned it over, and it said,
"You and me, Friday night, Rick."
My stomach dropped, my cheeks warmed, and my hands suddenly became clammy. I peeked around my locker door and locked eyes with him. Grinning, he mouthed,
"So?"
from down the hall. I looked from him to the paper and back, nodding a little too excitedly, happy on the outside, but flipping the fuck out on the inside. My dad was not going to approve. Later that day, we had it out, to say the least. Hands were flying, feet were stomping, trying to talk some sense into his stupid head. "Dad, I'm 15 years old. You can't keep treating me like a baby," I yelled from the kitchen island. He was helping Mama prepare dinner.
"Me, Alexander Ryder, you're not going out with that boy. End of story."
"You just full-named me. And no, the story has just begun. Dad, he's a good kid. Smart, athletic, loves fast cars. Did I mention smart?"
"I don't care if he's a president of the chess club, has braces and zits. You're not going on a date."
"Come on, Daddy. You were 15 once. Give me a break. I'm not asking to get married. I'm asking to go hang out. Be a normal teenager. Don't you trust me?"
"It's him I don't trust, Mia. And yes, I was 15 once. Not a good example to compare yourself to by any means, baby girl."
He gave me a smug look, causing Mama to chuckle under her breath. Papa once told me that Dad was an asshole to Mom when they were kids, and he was surprised she even forgave him for all the stuff he put her through. I bit my tongue, wanting to blurt this tidbit of information out, so he could see that he wasn't perfect, that I deserved a chance to make mistakes and learn from them like he did, but I decided against it. Instead, I played the girl card and went for Mama. "Mom, you know what it's like to be a girl. Talk some sense into your husband. Enlighten him, please." "Lucas, I've met this boy's parents. He's a good seed. I say she goes."
"You better not do anything with his seed, especially plant it."
"Are we talking about Rick or gardening?" I looked at them dumbfounded. "So I can go?"
"Fine, but on one condition."
He set down the knife he was using to chop up potatoes.
"Mason will be home on leave in a few days. If you want to go on this date,"
he said, struggling to say the last word,
"your brother will have to agree to go along."
I jumped off my chair and ran over to him, giving him a big squeeze hug, almost knocking him to the floor. "Thank you, thank you, thank you."
"Don't thank me yet. Your brother hasn't said yes."
Mason came home a few days later, like Dad said. I tackled him at the door, hugging him tight, telling him how much I missed him, right to asking him if he'd come on my date with me that Friday night. He looked at me like I had two heads, but Giselle agreed immediately, and he wasn't in the right position to say no to her. Much like my dad. Mason was putting Giselle through shit, too.
Creed. I spent 2 weeks recovering in the military hospital on base after being shot up in the woods. I should have embraced the fucking downtime, but I hated knowing my men were out on missions without me. I passed the time flirting with the nurses, seeing how many I could get to suck my cock after hours. Playing the I'm a wounded soldier card. I got more pussy in those 2 weeks than I had in months. You'd be surprised how many women were willing to serve their country on their knees. Getting a slap on the wrist, so to speak, for my actions and not standing down like I was ordered to do by my major. My only saving grace from being fucking demoted was that I was really good at what I did. We were our own entity. Most of the time we did whatever the fuck we wanted anyway. But once I was discharged, my major handled it with me behind closed doors, man to fucking man. I mean, he punched me in the goddamn face a few times, rendering me to the ground and getting another few good hits on my chest, face, and stomach. Threatening me if I ever disobeyed him again, he wouldn't think twice about taking away my fucking rank. For once in my life, I took every last hit like a fucking man, even though I could have taken him the fuck out. I was just grateful it was only my body that was taking the brunt of his punishment. We were back in the States on leave for 2 weeks. Owen was heading home to Arkansas to see his family and new baby girl. His wife gave birth to their first kid while we were footing the hills. I had never seen a grown man cry like he did when we returned to base. His wife sent him a video recording from the delivery room her mom had taken for him.
Want to head out with us tonight? Mason asked as I walked through the door of Gazelle's apartment. I'd spent most of the day with Diesel, throwing back some beers at a local bar and shooting the shit, bringing me up to speed on what had been happening at the club in my absence. Everything from official business down to how many new whores he had fucked. We talked about how my old man pretty much made the clubhouse's permanent residence, officially abandoning Mom but still giving her money to live on, adding to what I sent her every month, like that made things right. He still hadn't changed. He was still shady as fuck. You can help me scare the shit out of him, Mason added as I sat down in the armchair next to them, throwing my keys on the coffee table, wondering who the fuck they were talking about.
I think it's cute,
Gazelle chimed in, bringing my attention to her.
I don't mind chaperoning at all. You're just pissed your baby sister is going on her first date. Get over it, Mason. She's 15 now. It's about damn time your dad let her do something normal. Do you know what I had to go through just to go take her to get her nails done and to shop for a new outfit today? That poor girl is stuck at home all the time, much like me, waiting for you.
She emphasized, pushing her finger into his chest. I leaned forward, resting my elbows on my knees. Arching an eyebrow, I asked, Me is going on a date? Caught off guard. Mason sighed. Yeah, with who? Some fucking ass clown at her school has been on her ass to go out with him for the last month. I don't fucking know. Probably some fucking douche who pops his collar wearing polos and khakis. I guess my mom laid into my dad's ass to let her go on a date. He only agreed to let her go if I would go with him. Mia begged me as soon as we walked through the door last night, he stated, nodding to Gazelle. This one being the hopeless romantic she is, champed at the fucking bit. Gazelle smiled, wide.
What if they end up getting married?
She clapped her hands together enthusiastically.
We can say we were there on the first date. Oh, my God, she showed me a picture of him, and he's so cute. They're going to make pretty babies.
The fuck? I snapped at her exaggerated bullshit. No shit, he agreed. You in? Meet you there. Got some business to take care of. I quickly showered at Gazelle's, putting on a clean pair of jeans, a white t-shirt I had packed with me, and my cut. Sliding my gun in the back of my jeans before throwing on my leather jacket. I jumped on my bike and sped off toward the warehouse where my meeting was taking place. All I could think about was handling business and getting the fuck out, feeling the need to put that little shit in his place if he laid one hand on me. I pulled into the lot parking beside Martinez's limo. Taking off my helmet, I nodded to his fucking welcoming party of five armed men wearing black suits. One of them opened the back door, gesturing for me to step inside. I did, taking a seat across from the arrogant motherfucker in a black three-piece suit. You're late. Eyeing him up and down with a cocky grin. Just getting all pretty for you, I snidely replied, locking eyes with Martinez. I don't wait for anyone. Don't let it happen again. I'll remember that the next time I decide to actually give a fuck. Now, gonna handle business or just sit here and waste my fucking time? He pulled out a disc from inside his suit jacket, handed it to me. I cocked my head to the side, flipping it around in my hand to read the inscription. Truths. This it? Were you expecting a goddamn pony? It has everything you need. Now get the fuck out. I opened the door. As always, it was a fucking pleasure. I didn't give him or the disc any more thought. Sticking it inside the pocket of my leather jacket, I jumped back on my bike, revved the engine, and took off. Parking my bike near the back entrance of the bowling alley just after 8. I removed my leather jacket and securely fastened it to the back of my bike, placing my helmet on top of it. The place was crowded with kids running all over, screaming, laughing, and already annoying the hell out of me as I tried to make my way through the adolescent chaos. I spotted Mia before anyone else. She wasn't hard to fucking miss, showing more skin than I'd ever seen before. She was wearing a cream-colored dress that was way too fucking short and hung low on her chest. Her cowboy boots only added to her cutesy goddamn outfit. Cocky little shit standing in front of her couldn't have been taller than 5'10", weighing no more than 170, wearing a salmon-colored polo shirt, dark jeans, and Nikes. The kid definitely came for money. He wasn't staring at her face while she was yapping away. His eyes never left her cleavage that was on full display. She just stood there, twirling the ends of her hair as her body softly swayed to the shitty pop music playing through the speakers. He reached up, brushing a stray piece of hair behind her ear, grinning. She gave the bastard a look I knew far too fucking well.